It's wonderful to be back with all of you. Today I'd like to introduce very simple but very basic Zen statements connected with the sixth patriarch of Chinese Zen. This is a bit legendary, not strict history, but it's a good legend, and it provides us with a very valuable practical direction in our practice. As many of you know, the Chinese man who went on to become the sixth patriarch was supposed to be illiterate, couldn't even read or write. His father died when he was young, and he supported his mother by selling firewood in the town in southern China. One day, selling wood, he happened to hear a Chinese monk reciting the Diamond Sutra. And when the monk came to the part that says, "Mind arises without abiding," that is, without getting stuck, without attaching anywhere. Mind arises without abiding. He had an insight. It struck him. And many of you know the story. He eventually went on to practice under the fifth patriarch, although he was just a layman still. And he went on to become the sixth patriarch. When there was a chance for the head monk to take over as the sixth patriarch, a very famous poem he wrote about continually, constantly, carefully practicing, polishing the mirror, this kind of an image. And in response, the guy who became the sixth patriarch responded with the very famous, "Originally, there is not a thing. Where can the dust alight?" This statement in Japanese, "Honrai Muichi Motsu." Originally, there's not one thing. This is what showed him to be worthy to become the sixth patriarch. Anyway, it's a very nice legend, but the value of it in practice, this is what I want to make clear together with you today. What is this mind that arises without abiding, getting stuck in anything? Notice that, in a way, two sides are being shown here. Mind arises. This is essential. It's not dead. We don't become unconscious. We don't become zombies. No, we live in the world. We have a body and a mind. So, mind arises, that's not the problem. The problem is, of course, when it abides, when it gets stuck. So the point here is, yes, mind arises, but it doesn't get stuck anywhere. It freely works in and as the world. But we need to confirm this in our own bones. What or who really is such a mind? Is there really such a mind that doesn't get stuck on anything? To help you to see into this, consider well, who is born? Who passes away? Who concentrates in the practice? Who awakens? This is where we dig in, we dig down right here, nowhere else, right here. It's important to see that usually translated originally, there's not a thing. That originally, honrai, also has the sense of from the beginning. In other words, we're not talking about sometime far away that we need some help to get back to, but rather really right here and now, there is not one thing, inside or out, above or below, before or after. Is that really true? Can you confirm that in your bones, that there is not one thing? What does it really say? How to put it? This not one thing is what freely works in the world. Really plays in the world without getting entangled, without abiding anywhere. What about these seemingly endless mental circles that we go in? Is it really true? Originally, really? Right here and now, there is not one thing. What is all this mental contrivance? Where does it really come from? Where does it really go to? This is what we must make clear in our practice. Otherwise, it's just an endless conceiving this, conceiving that, and a deep down feeling that it is not fully satisfactory. We cannot come fully to rest in this or that. In a word, to realize, to awaken to this, not one thing. Please don't misunderstand. This is not some abstraction. It is the most immediate and concrete thing, but it's not a thing. It is literally inconceivable. It cannot be conceived. Well, to put it another way, we can conceive it, but then it's just a shadow. This, alive, and thriving, here and now, is not a single thing. It is truly inconceivable. It is the conceiving of the mind, the conceptualizing, the turning it into an object. This is what is an abstraction. Do you see? That is abstract. That is a shadow of what is really here. Not one thing. Freely working in and as the world. No longer seen through the lens of the self and turned into an object for me. It is unsatisfactory. See it through. But it is not unsatisfactory because the object is a problem. The real problem is that the self-delusion has turned it into an object. So it can never be fully satisfactory. It is this self-objectifying, stepping outside, this endless mind that cannot come fully to rest. This is what must come to an end. Then it becomes completely natural and obvious. Yes, really, there is not one thing here in this world of cars and trucks and COVID-19, life and death. There is not one single thing, not even a trace. Again, and this is what must work in the world with compassion, the work of love, truly creative, coming from nowhere, returning nowhere. This is what it really means. As the Diamond Sutra says, mind arises without abiding. Originally, perhaps better, really, there is not one thing. This is the essential teaching of what's called the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch. Huh? It is held in such high esteem that it's actually called a sutra. I trust you can see that this is something we can work with in our own practice, and we must make clear for ourselves. Again, thank you, Jeff Ward, and everyone for your patience and your great listening. I trust you will feel free to raise a question if you have one from out of the practice. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. If you have a question, then unmute yourself.
Thanks, Jeff. It's David.
Yes, David.
In the middle of my screen here is Michael's screen, and in the corner of his room is a grandfather clock with a pendulum swinging back and forth underneath it,
yes.
marking time.
Yes.
And I just wonder how the apparent truth of time and the arrow of time sort of juxtaposes against what you've just said.
You know from your own experience, don't you, David, huh? That when you sit deeply in Zazen, the sense we have of what we might call clock time, huh? And space as well, it starts to dissolve, doesn't it? Huh? We all know, not just in Zazen meditation, but when we fall in love, time is very different, isn't it? When you're apart from the one you love, or when you're together with the one you love, time is very different, isn't it? Sitting in painful Zazen, sometimes 1 minute can seem like an hour, can't it? On the other hand, sometimes an hour is like a minute. So clearly what we think of as this clock objective, so to speak, time, is one way of ordering the world and understanding it. But that's not what time truly is it, Dave? And it's the same with space, you know? We're far away, we're halfway around the world. physically. Yes, no doubt about that. No need to deny that. But at the same time, here we are, David, halfway around the world. And yet we're not, as it said, we're not one hair's breadth apart, are we? Would you like to say anything else? We have time.
Yeah, I guess it's the it's the sort of the challenge of the apparent reality of things, the way we've constructed them, that is well, what's occurring to me is the work is deconstructing all these apparent truths, just letting those fall away.
Yeah, we don't have to destroy them. They have their place. You know, I needed to be ready here at 3 o'clock Japan time. And so, yeah, that this clock right here is very helpful. Joshu or Jaojo, the Zen master infamous for the Mu Koan, huh? He once said to his monks, "You are used by the 24 hours. I freely use the 24 hours." You get a sense, David? There's no need to deny that, what we think of as space and time. Oh no, it's very real. And yet, see it through.
A question, a comment. I think that time and space gives each of us a reference point in which to relate to the rest of emptiness. Without that reference point, we'd be floating. We have no way of grounding ourselves, making sense of anything.
Are they really two different things, though?
Not really, but when we say time is relative and things like that, they all work, but say they are a means of establishing a, as it were, a point of view, a departure point, maybe, because I had to know when to be here and where here is to get here in order to be more one with you than otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's an upaya.
Mm-hmm. And when we are like this, what becomes apparent is those two apparently in some ways very different worlds are really not two at all.
It's like a quantum entanglement. or Indra's net.
Mm.
We're all reflecting each other, participating in each other's world. And that's what makes it so much fun. We see ourselves in so many different ways, so many different faces, so many different places. So I think I'm feeling that the Zoom itself is giving us the sort of power of, what's his name, the great layman.
Layman Pang?
No, before him, in Buddha's time, who could...
Oh, Fudashi.
could entertain 10,000 bodhisattvas in his three-mat room, you know.
Oh, Vimalakirti.
Yeah, Vimalakirti, thank you. Yes, well, at the moment you're entertaining a bunch of us in your small room.
Yeah, in a six tatami mat room.
Yeah.
And I see you have, looks like a Hanshan or Kanzan in the painting in the background. Huh?
That's right, yes. So my little room here has a room for you and many more if they care to turn up. No limit.
Thank you, Paul.
Jeff, I wonder if you could speak about how to work with that fundamental digging point of who in Zazen.
When we sit and when we give ourselves to the practice, our mind can wander off into streams of thought. We are all painfully aware of this. At the same time, when we have something that we truly concentrate on, in the sense I've been speaking of recently, not just turning the mind from one thing to another, when we really do that, it can be done with a koan. Actually, both of these statements, mind arises without abiding, and originally, really, there is not a thing. Both of these are used as koans in the Rinzai tradition. What's the point there? The point is simply to bring all of that, bring that mind that is arising, but still abiding somewhere on something. Somehow, and giving it something to focus, concentrate on that cannot really be objectified, cannot really be turned into an object. In a very good sense, it can't be solved. Better yet, it just dissolves. It can be dissolved, but not solved. So these kinds of questions, who, what, or even taking these two statements, but not just as a statement. You see, it has to become, what is that mind? You follow? Who is? I'm not the idea, not the six patriarch. Where is it in here? Where is that mind? What is that mind? Who is that mind? Then the attention turns, I wouldn't even say inward, it turns to the root, to the fundament. And then the whole problem of the mind wandering, wavering, going off, making stories, escaping, is more or less resolved, because the mind is, in a sense, in a very good way, falling into the source of itself, which is not an object. It cannot be objectified. We can talk a lot about these two statements, for example, but that's not it. So how do we do it? Yes, we give ourselves humbly, sincerely and patiently, and we don't turn away. We don't turn away. Do you know what I mean, Jeff? not sure I'm responding adequately to your concern. Yeah.
Yes, that's right to the point. Thank you. We're at 5 o'clock here and 4 o'clock where you are, Jeff. You need to, we should wind up shortly, I think.
Yes, I need to hopefully get to the Hungarians.
Are you not with them now?
Well, yes, kind of. They just started a retreat, a 5-day physical retreat. And so I'll try to meet them a couple times. But yeah, they're not far away. Actually, they just sent me a message. Please let me know when the Dharma talk is over and we can start the online encounter. Boy, oh boy, pretty good timing, huh?
Those Hungarians are on the ball.